Blog Talk Radio.
Brothers, 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 brothers in the house. I think we're going to get
going
tonight, brother.
All right.
Let's see what we can do, man. Let's see what we can do. Gentlemen, welcome to the Brothers for Real Radio Show. You're talking to Leon Gatewood now. I'm one of the brothers. We got about four or five on the line tonight, man. We live all the way live. Five all the way live. Before we get started, I'm going to give you a little information. The number to call in is 215-383-3872. We're going to be talking about Black history. Do you know your history? People keep saying it's important to know your history. We want to know why. But we got the right man on the show tonight with us to fill us in on all that good stuff. Got some history majors on the line. Got some bookstore owners on the line. We got all kind of brothers on the line tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, again, welcome to the Brothers for Real Radio Show. The number to call is 215-383-3872. We really enjoy talking to ourselves, but every now and then, we would really love to talk to you, too. How's it going tonight, Robert? All the way in Maryland or D.C., wherever you are. How you doing tonight, brother?
Hey, brother. Leon, how you doing? The other brothers, Joseph, Curtis, Leon, and the brothers who are not in the house. Tell you what, Leon, I was thinking today. This is what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing, I was talking to a client today, and this is not just the D.C. area. This is a global discussion. There are some infrastructure changes taking place right now that have caught some people by surprise. Many people thought this pandemic was going to blow over and that they want to go back to their jobs, to their offices, and life as usual. But what had happened, big companies, big tech, Fortune 500s, and any substantial company, about the 9-month mark in this pandemic, they started making infrastructure changes in their business, which means moving out of the big office space, going virtual. So if anybody's sitting around waiting for the good old days to come back, I'm just letting you know, at that 9-month mark, they started making these changes, and it became official probably on March 1 when they decided, to look, we're not going back to usual. So if you're trying to plot out your economic and business future, just know the good old days of going to the office, putting your feet up on the desk, taking a 1-hour break, those days are done. It's a new day.
Is it a new day? Is it a better day, though? Is it a better day?
Well, it's better for some. That's the thing. It's, this pandemic has rained on the good, the bad, the black, the white, the rich, the poor. It has rained on everybody, but it didn't rain on everybody the same. Some people are doing better than they've ever done, but the much like most of history, people of color get rained on the worst, and other people are kind of faring pretty well. So it's the same old song, just a new beat.
We're going to try to figure out tonight, get a little insight tonight anyway on why we keep getting rained on. Why is it us, man? Why is it us? Joseph Gatewood on the line, man. How you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing great, Leon. How are you? And how are you, Robert, Curtis, Daniel, all the radio, everybody out in radio land? How are you all doing? So glad to be here another night.
Hey, brother. Thank you.
Here in my office, trying to wrap up a few little business deals I'm working on here. Like Robert was saying, you know, this pandemic has changed the way a lot of people are going to be doing things, and of course I'm included in that number. And I think a lot of people are going to have to take on some new skills, you know, in order to cope with the new changes, because like you said, the days of going to the office, kicking your feet up on the desk might be over, but I'm still doing it, kicking my feet up, because...
Because it's your desk, right?
Exactly right, because I'm paying the rent.
Hey, but Joe, check this out. Do you remember?
Yeah.
I'm sure many people in our position, when we were sitting on that fence, kind of wondering if we should be crying or dreading the fact that we were not in the ranks of the employed, the corporate Americans, the people who are bringing home the steady paycheck. Let me tell you, man, we're the ones now looking over the other saying, nah, 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 nah. You should, that good old job, man. I'm telling you, there are so many people that are saying, man, why didn't I take that entrepreneurial route when I had the chance?
Oh, absolutely. Who invented Bojangles chicken? Not Bojangles, man. Popeye's chicken. Who invented this stuff, man?
You eat chicken, man?
Huh? Yeah, man.
Are you eating the chicken sandwich?
No, I'm not eating the sandwich, man. You know I had the sandwich before, maybe twice, maybe three times.
Hey, have you had the fish thing they came out with recently?
No.
Okay, all right. Man, you're supposed to be eating healthy. You're not supposed to be in that crap, man. Come on, man. You're setting a bad example for our health-minded followers.
I declare you're right, man. And I'm supposed to be, talk about something else. Curtis Gatewood, how you doing tonight, brother?
Hey, Leon. Hey, Leon, Joseph, Robert, Daniel, Clyde, Cecil, Lee, whomever else might be listening, Sant, Mama. Hey, it's great to hear you guys. It really is. Can y'all hear me good?
Very well.
Yes, sir.
Okay, good.
Sound like I hear you in the back room, too, man. Keep talking. That sounds strange.
Yeah, but because eventually, Leon, as we get into some history, I can show points where people are not always the one getting the worst end of especially economic times in our history. And that is what created some of the white jealousy that caused many of the massacres, because sometimes during these hard times, black people were actually doing better. But, of course, times have changed, and, of course, desegregation and so on and so forth might have changed that outlook. But there were times where black people were the best business operators and doing the best of all, you know. So,
come on, brother.
Keep that in mind as well as we go when we talk about
black people. Well, here's where I was going, though. I know we've had our day. Just trying to figure out why people keep picking on us. That's kind of where I'm going, you know.
Right. I'm saying.
Why people keep picking on us. Yeah, man.
Let me piggyback off of some of what Curtis just said.
Okay.
Quite frankly, it's a sad reality, but my business normally does better when the economy does kind of slow down, and right. when people are going through challenges, having challenged times.
And your business is, Joseph, and for our listeners, and your business is what?
My primary business is insurance. And we do homeowners insurance, car insurance, commercial insurance, life insurance. But quite frankly, any kind of insurance you can think of, we do it. And of course, a lot of times, you know, people call me about an insurance issue. I have no idea, you know, what they're talking about. But of course, I have the capability, because I'm an insurance broker, I can actually go out and find that coverage. You know, like a lot of times, you know, I tell people up front, I never heard tell of that. But if it exists, we can find it and we can write it for you. And of course, mm-hmm. I go to one of the surplus lines, one of the wholesalers, or sometimes, you know, it's the one that I'm contracted with. But the bottom line is, the point I was about to make is that it's a good thing and it's a bad thing that my business generally does better during hard times. Because during the good times, people, especially our people, they have a tendency to go with the mainstream. You know what I'm saying? They go with the mainstream, you know, the big name companies, this, that, and
the other. Okay, I got you.
You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, them boys.
But when times come get tough, that's when they find me. Because now they need somebody that's going to work with them. You know what I'm saying?
I feel you, bro.
Right.
And quite frankly, right now, I got so much stuff on my desk to do. I mean, really, it'll probably be the middle of June before I catch up. The reason I say that, because as soon as I finish one problem, I got another problem. You know, I got another problem I got to solve for somebody. You see what I'm saying?
Here's what I was telling somebody the other day, man. This is what I told somebody the other day. I said, African Americans and black folks, however we want to refer to ourselves as, need to stop treating African American and black businesses as museums. It's
right.
Like, you feel me? It's like a black insurance agent over there, man. They ride by and look at it and point it out to their family and go on down the street about insurance somewhere else.
Right.
That's funny.
Just like, yeah, I had a big old billboard up on North Tryon Street. And I know every African American in Charlotte probably has seen it at some point. And I see people all the time, hey man, I saw your billboard up there on North Tryon Street, because you had one of the main streets in Charlotte, of course. And it was costing me pretty good to have that billboard up there. And I keep reminding people that billboard is not up there just for y'all to ride by and look at and tell me you saw it. I said, that's advertisement. and I told my wife, I said, I'm going to take that billboard down, because I'm getting tired of people telling me they saw it and they ain't doing no business. And really, I took it down.
Right. That's tough.
Man,
that's ladies and gentlemen, listen to the Brother for Real Radio Show. The number to call is 215-383-3872. I have a very special guest waiting to talk, man. So we're going to yield for a minute and let that brother talk. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Mr. Michael Covington, the owner and operator of the No Book Store here in Morven, North Carolina.
How you doing?
Brother. This brother is for real. I'm trying to tell you. He knows it, and he walks the walk. That makes sense. He knows the talk. Hey, he can tell you anything. He has a book full of books. Every now and then I just slip in his store. I break in his store and show people around. I took a brother.
Hey,
in.
Man.
Yeah.
That's against the law, man. Ain't that against the law?
Yeah.
No, he's family. It's family.
You know what I mean, man? He called me family, man.
I love it.
You know?
Hey, I love it, man. We got another brother. All right.
Yeah, we got
another
for real brother on the line, man.
All
so,
right,
yeah,
man.
He has his store stocked with positive information, history. Just an admirable brother, man. And we're so fortunate to have him in the community, and very excited to have him on the show tonight. Mike, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm doing wonderful. How about you guys?
Doing great.
Hey, brother Mike. How you doing,
bro?
Man? This is Curtis Gates.
Great.
How you doing, brother?
How you doing, brother?
Hey, man, God is good, man. I'm glad to know. In fact, I was down there peeping in the window the other day at your bookstore down there. And, again, we are very proud and inspired. And, of course, you know, I know and have worked with the Bruce Bridges aspect of the No Bookstore here in Durham. But it's an honor to have you on the line, brother. God bless you.
Well, yeah, I appreciate it.
Mike.
I appreciate it.
Mike,
oh, yeah.
tell my folks a little bit about yourself, man. You know, just so, you know, much as you feel like telling, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Where are you from? Where are you from, Mike?
Oh, that's
why I was. Huh?
Man, originally, you know, same upbringing as most of us in the country, you know, which ain't necessarily a bad thing, but, you know, especially in times like now, you know, according to the subject matter, you know, it could bring some detrimental mindsets to us all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But basically grew up down here in Marvin, you know, went to school in Marvin Elementary School, had some great teachers at that time, you know, was fortunate enough to be in a surrounding and setting where the teachers actually looked like me and actually cared, you know, and didn't desire to see anybody fail, you know what I mean? So we'd go the extra mile of the way to make sure we was on the right track. But basically, you know, just listening to what your brothers are saying, you know, I was thinking about in times like this, we look back at history, you know, history, if you don't know where you come from, you really don't know where you're going, you know, and it used to be an old saying that they used to say, you know, nigger rigging, you know, just basically saying that we as black or melanated people, you know, we are very resourceful people. You know, that's how we began to eat things like chitlins and pig feet and pig ears and sow's meat. You know, we took the leftovers of what nobody wanted and we made the best of it. You know, so in this time of the pandemic, you know, I've witnessed brothers and sisters become very resourceful. You know, I've seen people pop up with businesses all out the woodwork of skills that they had previously learned and never done anything with it, you know. So so for me, you know, it's been motivational to witness that even in times like this, you know, that we could stand up, you know, stand up and be resourceful and I also witnessed that we drawn a greater sense of unity in that, because the one thing that I think that has been keeping us down as a people and what made the civil rights movement work is that everybody understood they was in the exact same situation at that time, where now we have more individual mindsets. So whenever you take a group of people and you put them where they are all experiencing the exact same thing, then those people have the tendency to bond together, and that bonding is our strength. You know what I mean? And that's what I've been kind of witnessing us go through now. You know, influx of black people starting to, and not only like Leon was saying, look at it like it's a museum, but also wanting to step foot in there and support our black brothers and sisters. You know, because they understand that we're behind, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're behind in terms of generational wealth, knowledge, just in general, you know. So we're kind of behind the times. And I think that we're making some monumental steps in this particular time towards, you know, becoming a better people and a better community.
Let me ask you this, Mike. What made you decide to open up the bookstore, and how much trouble was it? When I say trouble, was it easy for you to do, or just had a made up mind, or what?
Well, you know, I had a good supporting cast, you know, and you know, because you was one of them, you know. I was fortunate enough at one point in time to put myself back through school and get an electronic engineering degree. You know, I come up, you know, kind of like what you're saying, in a good household, but, you know, as I got older, you know, haven't really experienced a whole lot of life. Once I got out on my own, I experienced life, you know, that was completely contrary to the things that I was brought up to believe and to do. So, you know, some of the very things now that I stand against was some of the very same things that I was once a part of. You know, so the history part to me was somewhat of a, I guess what you would call an experience of somebody going to church and finding salvation. You know, once I started to see and hear about and learn different things that I was never taught in the institute, you know, that we call school, once I started seeing that, it was like liberating to me. It was like freedom to me, you know, and that changed me, you know, and in that changing, and I looked around at the other people around me in my community, you know, and looking at the genocide that we're committing against each other, you know, it was like I was commissioned, you know, in my mind and from the ancestors, you know, to carry on a greater work than just simply exist. So that kind of sprung forth the idea that, you know, knowledge is power, you know. So I wanted to be able.
Yeah, I was just going to say, man, sound like you've been born again. People ask me often, how can I start a nonprofit? What do I need to do to start a nonprofit? And I just tell them, look, pretty much point blank, you got to be born again.
You got to be born again.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely right. I mean, you couldn't have said it no better way.
That's right.
You couldn't have said it no better way at all. You know, you got to be born again. You got to take on a newness. You know what I mean? And you got to be willing to sacrifice what a whole lot ain't willing to sacrifice.
That's right. We got Curtis Gatewood on the line with us too, man, and Joseph Gatewood. Now, Joseph, a history major. We wanted to talk about history tonight, and, you know, people always say you just need to know your history.
Mm-hmm.
What is your history, and why is it important? Why is my history important to me, Joseph?
Well, the reason your history is important to you because we don't have a crystal ball to look into the future, but we can look at to what has happened in the past to get a good indication of what may occur in the future.
Man, I like that answer.
Yeah. Yep.
Where'd you get
and,
that?
Huh?
Where'd you get that answer, man? That's pretty good. I like that.
I just thought about it when you asked the question. but really, the reason I say that is because it's true.
Right.
Because you know, it's just like I've been looking at a lot of current events, and I go back, you know, and use my history background to find an event that correlates to what's happening right now to get a good idea of how this particular event that's going on right now, how it's going to end up, just based on how it ended up in the past. Now, you're not going to find, in the past, somebody with the exact same names, the exact same places, and may not even be the same type of conflict. But you can look at the past and see how these events were resolved and, of course, and get a good indication now of how they may resolve. Just like, for example, you know, I've often told people, I say, anytime there has been a major conflict between the whites, black people have progressed. I mean, you can go all the way back through history, and you can see wherever there was a conflict between white people, there was black people progressed. Just like, say, for example, if you go all the way back to 1776 when the Revolutionary War started. When the Revolutionary War started, of course, the international slave trade was going on. And of course, after during the Revolutionary War, they suspended the slave trade because where they said it didn't look good internationally, it was a PR reason or whatever the case may be, economics or whatever. whatever the case. But during the Revolutionary War, of course, they suspended the slave trade. And, of course, you know, shortly after that in 1807, of course, they passed a law in 1807, which Thomas Jefferson signed into law in 1808, that actually that ended the slave trade. Now, it didn't end slavery. It didn't end slavery, but it ended the international slave trade. But then you come all the way up to the Civil War. Of course, you got a conflict going on here. During that conflict, of course, you know the result of that conflict was the Emancipation Proclamation, and ultimately black people, came out from under the bondages of slavery. Come on up to World War II. You know, during World War II, of course, that's when Hitler was wreaking havoc all over Europe, of course, on France and Britain and all these European countries that were involved in colonialism. All these countries were involved in colonialism. And, of course, the biggest issue that most Europeans had with Hitler was not because because he was murdering people, because keep in mind the British and the French and all of them had declared war on Africa during that Berlin Conference, in which they divided Africa up among themselves. But after during World War II, of course, with Germany dropping bombs on England and Germany occupying France, well, the iron feet of oppression had to be lifted from a lot of these countries in Africa that were being colonized. And you notice right after, in the early 60s, late 50s, these African countries started to, get their independence out from under colonialism. So when I say that to say this, of course, we got a conflict going on now in America. A conflict going on in America right now. And after that conflict is resolved, I can guarantee you, just based on the past, that we'll come out better.
That's deep. You're a bad man. Anyway, I wish I would have said that. Man. Curtis Gayward, I'm going to that, bro. Curtis.
Hey, Leon, and again, to all of the panelists, I would say, and to follow up from my big brother, I would probably say that I've heard it said before, and I just repeat it now since you asked about the importance of history. You know, I've heard it said that a person who does not know his or herself or history is like a tree without roots. And so what we're looking at, you have to have a foundation to build your knowledge upon. If you don't have a foundation, then it's going to be very difficult for you to be educated, and it's certainly going to be difficult to love yourself, as the scripture tells us, to love thy neighbor as thyself. If you don't know yourself, you don't know your history, you're definitely not going to love yourself, because your enemy is going to have a wide range and an open rein to say who you are. And if you don't know who you are, then you're leaving it to your enemy to define who you are. And we all know the danger and the harm that would be done when someone else tells his story over the true story. So we've had to endure that throughout our existence here in this country as people who are actually robbed of our history, robbed of our culture, robbed of our knowledge of who we are. And the biggest and the worst part of that, that we often totally underestimate, is when the enemy takes you out from under your culture and your knowledge of your history, and he fills in the blanks. That's a deadly proposition. So what we're dealing with here, I just wanted to say while we're talking about it, I think we've heard a lot of the great history and how it ties with our existence and European culture, the West, and how we've been totally deprived, robbed, and just so many. It's an inexpressible process that we talk about when we talk about the damage that has been done to our history, our culture, and not even getting into how it's being, how the media is filling in the blanks as well with negative stereotypes and all other kind of mess. So my point would be, I think we can start a process. This is a process that I've taken upon myself to do, as we talk about taking history, Black history beyond February, is I started it right before the pandemic broke out. Anytime I speak or anytime I talk or when I'm writing or whatever, you're going to probably see it reflected in some of the things I write, whether it be social media, hopefully to write a book at some point. But I think we should, the way we can have a system in bringing our history back and not leaving a stone unturned, as we go into a new month, we look into that month. And if you have to Google it or read or research in other ways, find out what happened of significance as it relates to the Black experience, Africa, or Black people in that particular month that we find ourselves in. Like, for example, now we're in March. We're in March, for example. You know, we have to ask, do you know on March 5th, 1770, the story about Crispus Attucks? You know, we have to ask about that, he being the first revolutionary to die, you know, through Boston Massacre. We have to ask, do you know what happened on March 6th, 1857 with the Dred Scott decision? We have to ask those questions. Well, we hear these terms about three-fifths of a man and all these other things. Where did that come from? You know, do you know about March 1st, 1875, when Congress passed the Civil Rights Bill? The Civil Rights Bill wasn't just passed in 1964 or 1965, these various bills that we got from President Johnson. All that stuff had been passed before. So so something to take away from what Joseph said, when you know you've already had a Civil Rights Bill passed all the way in 1875, and you had to come back and pass another one, that means you never stopped fighting. Because just because it would pass doesn't mean it wouldn't be taken away. It won't be taken away. And then, of course, March 12th, the sad, well, Malcolm wasn't murdered until February 21st, which that I thought was interesting how quietly that anniversary went by, February 21st, 1965. But he did in March, on March 12th in 1964, Malcolm announced that he was split from the Nation of Islam. And, of course, that pretty much set the stage, as unfortunately you might hear Farrakhan even say it set the die was set, unfortunately, upon his split. And the, of course, with the inner workings of COINTELPRO, we have to talk about COINTELPRO at some point in our communities. Of course, COINTELPRO is the acronym for Counterintelligence Program. We need to know that history there. That was, of course, under J. Edgar Hoover. He basically put together a program to murder successful Black leaders. That's where that Messiah, y'all recently saw the movie about Judas and the Messiah. COINTELPRO used terminology like to prevent the rise of a Black Messiah, or to neutralize, meaning kill, incarcerate, whatever, to someone that's seen as a Black Messiah. Of course, you know they were talking about Dr. King, they were talking about Malcolm X, Fred Hampton, all of them. And so there were these things were deliberate. These people are just killing each other or having problems inside their organizations just out of the clear blue sky. It was planned, plotted, and we need to know about that history, and we need to have ways of checking to see if people are being used for that purpose today. And that's how we're in.
And also, for George Santayana, he was a writing philosopher. And one of his famous quotes is that those who do not learn history are doomed to repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know your history, you are doomed to repeat it.
Hey, Curtis.
Course, you know, we got very dark history out here. And some things that, you know, we don't need to repeat. And I'm going to tell you something while we're on that subject of history. Now, I know everybody talks, now, Black history is important, but the problem in America is that no history is taught correctly. In other words, white people, especially working class white people, are suffering from miseducation and not knowing their history just as bad as Black people.
Right,
absolutely.
They need to know black history and, like you said, all history. They don't know any.
They need to know history, period. Because if they knew history, they would know. They would know that at height of the Civil War, when the Civil War started, only 6% of people in the South owned slaves. Only 6%. And if you use that number as a whole, incorporated into the entire nation, only 1.4% of the people in the United States owned slaves when the Civil War started. In other words, I don't think they understand that we had 638,000 casualties during the Civil War. Over 1 million people were mutilated and maimed, and the South was completely almost burned to the ground to protect the interests of just 1.4% of the people in America. And why I think that is important is, if you look at America today, you still have the whole country in turmoil and suffering because of 1.4%. When they passed that tax bill, that's about the amount of people that got the bulk of that $1.4 trillion tax cut that was passed into law by Donald Trump. The bulk of that money went to that same 1.4%. And because of that 1.4% that's still greedy and taking all the money for themselves, just like Bezos, for example, got it on Amazon. He made $6 billion in one day. He could have taken $6 billion and doubled the pay of his entire workforce, but he made that amount of money in one day. He could have taken that $6 billion and doubled the annual pay for his entire workforce, $6 billion. But what I'm saying is, because of the greed of this 1.4%, the same 1.4% that led us into a war and destroyed this country pretty much destroyed the South and fought to try to protect the institution of slavery. These same people right now, that's why we don't have adequate education. That's why our infrastructure is falling to the ground. That's why we don't have a good health care system. That's why we have so many homeless people. Because the money is here in the United States, but the same 1.4% that tore this nation apart to try to maintain slavery is the same 1.4% that's sucking all the money out of the economy right now.
Hey, Joseph, I think what you're also saying is the poor whites are, I don't know how to say it, they're being used.
Used just like they were used during the Civil War.
Right.
Rich white boys did not go out there and get their legs shot off and their eyes shot out. The same people are suffering right now. I mean, because that's another part of history that the history book doesn't tell you. Every time we look at movies that were during the era of slavery, only thing you ever see is how the plantation owners were living. See the plantation owners and you see the slave. You don't see how the poor white people were living. Those people were in desperate, destitute conditions. And a lot of them still are. A lot of them still are. Because they've been used and still being
Leah. Exactly. Look, I wanted to say this too, and it kind of coincides with what Joe was saying. We spend a lot of time talking about the slave mentality, right? We talk a lot about the slave mentality. We don't talk enough about the slave master mentality. And the slave master mentality is what allowing these people to get away with making about $50,000 per hour while people can make making $7.25 an hour. We're not looking at the slave master mentality is what's causing these people not to want to pay people a living wage, and people are allowing them to get away with it. The slave master mentality will make people think that it's okay to make $6 billion for one man while everybody's working on the front line making them rich. They think that's okay. There's nobody on earth that much better or more valuable than the other person. And so I've always felt like there needed to be somewhat like what I would call a sliding scale on pay. In other words, there should never be a certain gap. The gap should never be so big. If you're in a corporation where you're making enough money to pay yourself, you know, $50,000 an hour and all these other types of things that we're seeing, then that says to us that that corporation is successful enough for everybody to be making a very livable wage. And right. But if you have like a mom and pop shop where you're barely making it, then there should be somewhat a minimum that you can pay. But you have these corporations and these CEOs out here, and they're making all this money, and they're going by the same pay scale or livable wage or wage or maximum wage or minimum wage as a person who's struggling on a business. Black people who had to start from boots that didn't have straps, you got the same minimum wage of the corporation that robbed you for 400 or 500 years. So I'm saying these corporations that have all this money, there needs to be some type of sliding scale that they cannot pay anyone below the top paying, the person that's receiving the top pay of that CEO. There should be a certain percentage that they can't go beneath. And so that's what I'm thinking.
Couldn't agree with you more, brother. Brother Covington.
To break up what I call the slave master mentality. But go ahead.
All right, Brother Covington, you still with me?
I'm still with you.
All right, brother. Look, man, you down here on the ground with everybody, man. What do you see as one of our biggest issues as far as getting our community motivated? More people like you. We want to produce more people like yourself. How do we do it, man?
Well, you know, it goes back to a lot of what we're talking about, you know, slave mentality and the master's mentality.
Right.
We all confused, you know what I mean? And we dealing with a whole bunch of programming, you know, and we can't get past the programming, you know. So one of the biggest things for me when I look around and I see, you know, is even in talking about history and all of it, I'm over here in awe myself just listening to these other brothers talk, you know. But one of the things about history that I realize and been able to get through to other brothers is that we've been just studying history in terms of us as a black people as a result of us being enslaved. You know, so we hear the history that only they allow us to retain. They don't give us all the black history. So I'm looking at it like in terms of us brothers and sisters, you know, that's out there and been brainwashed and programmed to go along with the system. I'm looking at it in a sense of we really don't have. If you're born in a bad situation, not ideal situation, you outside of the history that they give us, and they only give you enough history to take you back to a slave ship, nothing prior to that. So just the same way that the poor whites was miseducated, we were too. If you don't have nothing that you can draw back to understand that you was once great prior to all of this, and you're born in a bad, unideal situation, I mean, what do you do? You know what I mean? How do you really truly know that you could be greater if you don't have an example that you could see where you once were great? The greatest of all. No history that ever existed that I'm saying history in the same way, like Curtis said, his story You can't have history without black history. We are the history. We are the founders of it all. You know what I mean? Every single thing that exists, mathematics, language, you know, even the Renaissance, you know what I mean? That's still to go back to, but they never had it. So they got that from us, you know what I mean? So the biggest thing for me is looking at people. We stuck in the system. We stuck in the programming. You know, the Willie Lynch syndrome, everything that they documented and outlined of what they wanted to do and how they was going to go about doing it, we live in that right now, you know. And if we even go back to Black Wall Street, you know, we talking about, I mean, in terms of their movement and progression, we talking about less than 100 years after not being allowed to read and educate ourselves, we done built up a whole economic infrastructure, you know, and with segregation, us leaving our businesses that we had and just wanting the pride of being denied to go in establishments prior to that. You know, just the pride of the people, you know, to go in there and just say that they bought something from here and there and everywhere when they never really truly wanted you there to start with. We left our opportunities on the table back then.
Go ahead, brother.
Go ahead.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. If that had not been the case, you know, then we wouldn't necessarily be looking for our government to really do anything for us, because we would be self-sufficient and self-dependent, you know. And for me, looking at, like, I see it like as a in terms of a progression. For me, I'm looking at it like I feel like right now, especially with the airing of killing of innocent black people, I feel like people are finally getting it. I feel like it's finally clicking in their mind that everything that they thought once was, the dream that they thought that they was living, the king had, it may not be so. And I think now, especially with social media and people seeing it in their face all day, people steady throwing out black history, black facts, the state of what we call the union right now. You know, these current issues, current affairs, I think that we're beginning to pick up the pieces. I mean, we got a whole lot of people still left astray, but I think that it's people that's picking up the pieces, and I think we're going to get there. And I believe the more examples that people can see, kids can see, me running my bookstore, cultural center, cutting hair, whatever it takes for me to be able to do for another kid or another grown black person to see and draw strength from that and inspiration from that, then I think that, you know, we're on the right path, because I believe that outside of corporate America, a lot of the small town, I guess you could say mom and pops and stuff, you know, they really hadn't been able to see that, you know. They hadn't seen black wealth manifests itself outside of somebody selling substances that's killing our own people, you know, and have nice vehicles and nice clothes and stuff like that. I mean, you know, I feel like we making some headway by being in the position that we are and educating ourselves.
Right quick, ladies and gentlemen, you listen to the Brother for Real Radio Show. We got about 10 minutes left. 215-383-3872 is the number to call in to speak with the guest. If you have called in, if you would like to speak with a guest, just hit the one key on your phone, and that'll let us know you want to speak. But in the meantime, I just wanted to say, I asked Brother Covington that question because he's the question about what he thinks we need to do, because in my opinion anyway, he's the perfect example of what needs to happen in our communities. He has his store loaded with black history, things of that nature, and healthy items or things for natural health and things of that nature, as well as he has the spirit of giving and the spirit of assisting others as he goes along. And that is going to be the key to the success of our community. The village has to come back together. The village has to wake back up. The village has to heal. And when I say heal, I'm saying we need to get on one accord. Like Dr. King said, black folk got to learn to work together. Yes, sir.
Yeah, man. I wanna really piggyback on that point and say that we need to support brothers and sisters who are step up, like Brother Mike Covington and others. The village has to. It is essential. It's imperative that the village, and what I hope to do, again, once we get back, I don't think we'll probably get back to business as usual, as I've heard, but once we can find our way through this pandemic, I do want to try to help Brother Covington and others in the area or in other places to try to drum support for these businesses. Because, you know, we can act like it's okay, but then we allow a strong brother like Covington to come out here and do what he's doing. And if we're not trying to build some type of way to sustain these businesses and making sure the church or whomever else in the community are trying to support these businesses, allowing this brother platform to come in and talk about his businesses, whether it be at a church, whether it be an organization, and anyone who's doing these types of things, who's stepping out here, these are the reasons we should have our organizations and our churches, is to make sure that people who are, in fact, trying and doing the right thing, that we're supporting them. Because, you know, we keep talking about doing the right thing, and then we have people who are out here trying to do the right thing, and we're not supporting them, then we're just, you know, being hypocritical about telling folk that they need to do the right thing. Help people who are doing the right thing. And I want to say to all the people in Anson County, surrounding counties, when you see people trying to start a business, you know, you need to support those people. Go in there. Spend your money. Don't just pass by and point and say, oh, that's that new bookstore that just opened up. Because there are so many things in that bookstore, you know, just one book could change a person's life.
That is true.
So I'm just hoping, Leon, that I can help to beat people toward that bookstore and anything else that opens up in the black community that I know for a fact will help us to get past this self-hatred, this ignorance, this killing, this stealing, this backstabbing, backbiting, nigger-acting mess that we're having to see on the streets. You know, we are not niggers. People need to know that. Stop acting like niggers.
That's right.
Hey, Leon.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Another thing I want to say before we get off the air, we need to stop letting other people decide what history we going to celebrate and who we going to celebrate during Black History Month or during Black History Year. Because like I say, you know, we shouldn't be just celebrating Black History I'm doing February. That should be a part of our life. You know, just like, of course, you know, a lot of people don't know there were empires all over Africa. You know, I mean,
right.
we about the ones in of Egypt and Ethiopia. We know about those. But you know, there were empires and castles in sub-Saharan Africa, all the way down to Zimbabwe. That we never hear about. But when we talk about our black leaders that were important to us in black history, we have a tendency, and now, you know, of course, I don't want to take away from any of the people that we hear about them every year during Black History Month, but I want to hear somebody talk about, you know, Huey Newton's contribution to the to our civil rights movement, you know, the Black Panther leader. What about Marcus Garvey? Why we don't talk about Marcus Garvey? Why we don't talk about Pierre Toussaint, who led a successful revolution in in Haiti that defeated Napoleon's army, and
that's
ultimately
right.
Gained caused Haiti to become an independent black nation. Why we don't talk about
Chaka Zulu? We don't talk about Chaka.
Why we don't talk about
Nat
Turner right here?
Mansa Musa, the richest,
led a revolution. Why we don't talk about Denmark Vesey? You know, Denmark Vesey was organizing a slave revolt down in Charleston, North Carolina. Why we don't talk about Black Brown? Why we don't talk about Angela Davis? You know, just like
that's
I had fun to do one year doing Black History Month. I started out by telling the class, I said, Dr. Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, Harriet Tubman, I said, these were great people. They were great leaders. I said, but that's not all of the civil rights struggle. There was some violence involved. There were some brothers that came out and, put their lives on the line and said, look, we ain't gonna take this mess no longer. We're gonna fight.
Right.
All these HBCU founders and presidents. And, man, our history is so vast. It's so diverse. We have a very diverse history.
We got a very diverse history.
And
there's a lot of history.
When you start talking
about
Black History Month,
there's a serious Black history in North Carolina that we don't talk about.
And Curtis, you were talking about March, things that happened in March earlier. Great things that happened in March. What about March 22nd, 1958?
John Gatewood was born. About March 9th, 1953, Joseph Gatewood was born. Let me tell you something else that happened on March 9th, though. Let me tell you something really of historical significance that happened on March the 9th. On March in 1849. Of course, 1841, excuse me. Y'all heard it. Well, a lot of y'all went to the movie Amistad.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah. And of course, you know the gist of that story. You know the slaves. You know they commandeered the slave ship, took it over, and ended up north. I think it was in Connecticut where they finally landed. And of course, they had some abolitionists up in the area, and they took the thing all the way to the Supreme Court. And, of course, because by then, keep in mind, the slave trade in 1841, the international slave trade, had been banned. In other words, it was illegal. But still, people were smuggling in slaves into the United States and the rest of them, down the Caribbean and everywhere else. But anyway, this case went all the way to the Supreme Court, and Joseph Sinkay, he was the leader of that revolt where they took over the slave ship and threw the slavers, whatever you want to call them, people that were running the slave, threw them overboard. And they ended up in Connecticut, and of course they got their freedom and they were exported back to their homeland. And of course that happened, but the Supreme Court made that decision on March the 9th, 1841, which is on my birthday. Not the 1841, but the March the 9th.
No, I can ready to say, boys. Look, guys, our time is basically out, but I want to say a couple of things before we go. Now, next week we're going to have Mr. Arthur Lockhart. He's a representative of the Dudley Products. Did you guys know that, Grenadine nutmeg oil, did you know it had these properties? Pain of backaches, muscular aches and joints, cramps, neck and shoulder pain, toothache, athletic injuries, all that kind of stuff. Did you know that nutmeg oil is a pain reliever, a natural pain reliever? Anyway, we're going to be talking about that next week and how the Dudley organization has a grip on that nutmeg oil and we're going to be distributing in the community and we're going to be a part of it. Like I
said, snake oil, is it?
No. You're trying to be funny, man. All right, Joe. Now, you did good. You did good. You
look,
done well tonight. I was getting ready to give you a
Leon.
Smiley.
Leon.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we're going to, we talked about it before. Want to eventually bring some activists on, too. Some people out here doing, some activist work now.
Yes, sir.
Exactly.
We need everybody we can get in this conversation.
In fact, we have a man out there in Philadelphia who's been on strike, on a hunger strike, against trying to make sure that the mayor would do something about the violence. Of course, I mean, he's not just dependent solely on the mayor, but the mayor had been making some statements or not doing some things that he felt like would be beneficial to the community. And so he's been doing some a hunger strike. Brother Jamal Johnson, who's a part of the Stop Killing Us campaign, probably won't have him to say some things. So I'll check. We'll do, of course, I won't try to interfere with what Brother Lockhart's going to do, but I'm just saying at some point, probably before the month is out.
There'll be plenty of room, there'll be plenty of room. Bring them on in, man. There'll be plenty of room. We can't talk about that may go over so long and everybody, Mr. Lockhart.
That's right. That's a lot of stuff we're supposed to cure, though.
Well, you got to talk about all that. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Brothers for Real radio show. Almost immediately after this show, there'll be a live link that you can click on and just hear this good information all over again, or take it and share it among your friends that could not make it to listen to the live show. Thank you, Brother Coven, for joining us tonight. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you, Curtis. Thank you, Robert. Thank you for all of you guys out there in radio land that are listening to us. Well, like I said, we'll be right back next week doing some more good speaking. Looking forward to hearing you guys, all right? Everybody have a good night. We out of here, man.
All right. Good night.
All right. Brother Covington.
Just don't understand.